Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 17. And 17, Dave, is the number that Keith Butler wants his defense to keep their opponents at or under. And for the second week in a row, they succeeded in that in a game where the offense, I think it's fair to say, struggled. But an AFC North game against a difficult, good opponent in the Bengals, the Steelers start 2-0 and get a 24-16 win. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, who knew that the defense would end up being the side of the football that really, you know, kind of carried the team against the Bengals on Sunday? And the wet weather conditions, I think, definitely played a role in especially Ben Roethlisberger's ineffectiveness, as did the way that they have, you know, they defended the Steelers' passing game, which really isn't a surprise with the way they did it. If you go back over the last, what, three, four, five meetings between the two teams. And, I think there's a lot of positives to take away from this game, as well as some things to be concerned about that, you know, that we're going to get into. But the big thing is they came away with a victory. They are now 2-0. They have the Eagles up next, and as we talked about, you know, on the Friday show, if they get past this game on Sunday, you know, who knows what the record might be when they take on the Patriots later on in midpoint of the season.
Yeah, you got to feel good about a win. And so, you know, first off, as we generally do with the injury report, pretty good. Mike didn't lead with it. He got to it kind of toward the end of his postgame presser. We didn't see anything all that noticeable. The thing that was, I think, maybe most noticeable was that Ben Roethlisberger kind of twice left the field of play. And, you know, that's something that maybe you can't always see when you're watching on television. But, you know, who knows if he just went down to use the bathroom or whatever, and Ben didn't make any – nobody kind of asked him about it. Nobody made an issue of it. So I don't think it was significant. But Landry Jones put his helmet on one time, and one time on the sideline, he took a couple snaps from Marquise Pouncey. So I'll assume it was not injury-related. You know, he just maybe an equipment issue or something he had to deal with. But they came out injury-free. Ryan Shazier was specifically asked about how he felt and said, you know, the knee felt good and everything looked good. So, Dave, not only does it look like the 46 guys that they dressed will be available for this game on Sunday, you would think they've got to be awfully close to getting back first Marcus Wheaton, maybe Cody Nix, because he did practice at least on Wednesday last week. So maybe they'll have we'll see a couple new faces in the lineup when the Steelers play on Sunday.
Yeah, you said Cody Nix, Cody Wallace, and Rose.
Yeah, I combined them. I'm thinking more likely, obviously, Cody Wallace. But yeah, Rosie Nix, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, and one other thing, you know, maybe worth kind of keeping an eye on at the start of practice. I don't think it's going to be anything big. Was Cameron Hayward did leave momentarily during that game? I don't know. Did he tweak the ankle again or something like that? But he had to come off for a play or two in the second half. And I think Mike Mitchell left for a play or two earlier in the game, but he returned as well. Boy, you hit on a good name there during that rundown, Ryan Shazier. that knee looked absolutely fine to me. I don't know about you. He led the team in tackles, had a tackle for loss. I think three of his other tackles were within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage. He looked explosive. You know, the kind of Ryan Shazier that, you know, that when he's been on the field, you know, those are the things that we've seen. And you know, as long as he's able to stay on the field this year, you know, that's the type performances we're going to expect out of him. And Mike Tomlin not only praised his play after the game, but also talked about you know, kind of the leadership role that he has now in that defense, being the quarterback of the defense and making sure the calls get disseminated throughout the rest of the defense. And really, I mean, not a lot not to like about the play of Ryan Shazier on Sunday against the Bengals.
No, and that's I'm with you on that. And you know, it's hard to always it's very difficult to pick a play of the game in a football game because, you know, scoring plays are obviously significant. And if it's not a scoring play, how can it be the most important play of the game? But I'll tell you, I would certainly nominate Ryan Shazier's play after the pass interference call in the end zone on Artie Burns, where the Bengals down 17-6, up first and goal from the one, and they turn and give it to their big back, Jeremy Hill, and bang, Ryan Shazier smokes through the line and tackles him for a 2-yard loss. And as you know, then the Golden pushes out Uzuma on the next play, and then Dalton kind of makes a bad decision on third down, throws an incompletion, and the Bengals settle for a field goal. You know, that was as significant as just about anything in the game in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Tripping up with Jeremy Hill with really an arm tackle, you know, sliding through that gap on what was it, the Steelers' left side, I guess, of the defensive line there, just about that A gap or B gap or so. It was a big play, especially as you stated, coming off of the pass interference there. And then the play that followed it with there's a lot of we got a lot to talk about as far as plays and questionable calls, but the push out by Robert Golden, Marvin Lewis should have challenged that play, right? I mean,
yeah, you know, I didn't get as good a look at it as probably people at home did during the game, and I saw it and I kind of looked at it, and obviously he didn't get his second foot down, but if you get a knee down, that's the equivalent of 2 feet. And it certainly looks like he could have gotten his knee down. Dave, I will tell you, that is an inexcusable gaffe for a coaching staff on a scoring play. I mean, and I don't put it on Lewis. I put it on the guys in the box who were, you know, supposed to review that stuff and get down to him. But anything close like that, they obviously hadn't used a challenge at that point, at least to my recollection. You can't miss something like that in an NFL game.
Well, here's the press asked Marvin about that after the game was over, and here was the exact question and response. Did you consider challenging C.J. Uzoma's knee being down on the Steelers' goal line stand? Marvin, I was told he was out of bounds.
Well, then exactly what I said. It's the guys upstairs.
Yeah, so, there you go. Huge, you know, I've trolled some Bengals fans this morning on Twitter as it relates to this one play. And, I finally ended up posting, look, Bengals fans more than anything should be furious at Marvin Lewis for not challenging that play, because, you know, that's the type of stuff that you that you're paying.
They could win or lose games, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Make really change the complexion, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just, look, the Steelers red zone defense, again, great. In fact, they have now kept teams out of the end zone on 6 out of 7 trips into the red zone. Washington going 1 of 4 and the Bengals going 0 of 3. They lead the NFL, not surprisingly, in that category after 2 weeks. So, that contributed to that right there. Dave, why don't we start with the offense and, you know, just a bad day for Ben. And, I hope people get a chance to hear the postgame show across the Steelers radio network in Pittsburgh. It's, you know, DVE or ESPN Pittsburgh, and you can hear it on the Game Day app on Steelers.com. But, I've really enjoyed the first two shows I've done with Charlie, and it's, you know, it's the insight that he brings on things like this, me talking about the climate and the weather. And I think we've seen Ben do well in adverse conditions. So I for one, was surprised. But, you know, Charlie talked about it, and the fact that the rain really never let up. It was a constant thing. And when you go no huddle, the referee's not switching the ball out as often. And, you know, just the difficulties you face in this type of thing. And, we saw it with Ben. It's as inaccurate as I can remember seeing him. I didn't think his decision-making was great. But he struggled. And, look, you just have to look across the field. Andy Dalton struggled as well. This was not, you know, Ben was bad, Dalton was good. Dalton was off target plenty of times on open receivers. We're just not used to seeing NFL quarterbacks, particularly of this caliber, miss guys this open.
Yeah, Ben was 3 of 9 on his deep passes that flew more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. Two of those three went to Coates. You know, 33% isn't like, you know, awful. But, you know, when you're talking about Ben, you'd ideally like to see that number, 45 to 50% during the game. One of the two deep ones that he did connect to Sammy Coates was a great throw, probably his best throw of the game, right? You know, he drops back.
Yeah, and the difference there is they went to the post instead of the go.
Right. Dad, you had play action off of it, and I posted this last night in kind of a film room session. It looks like the Bengals are playing quarter half on that, because the deep safety is on the opposite side of the field from where Ben threw the football. And if you watch, and I have a zoom of that as well in a GIF or GIF, depending on how the listeners want me to say it, you can see Ben momentarily take a look to Antonio Brown on the left side. That effectively holds, you know, that deep safety over on that half of the field there. And then it's just a matter of getting the ball out there to Coach, who had worked his way inside of who was on that side. Kirkpatrick on that side, and
who played a pretty good game, I thought.
Yeah. Overall, I thought he did as well. And Coates was able to slip inside of him on that post, and Ben put it right to him. Now, the other completion, deep completion to Sammy Coates in the game, was that classic, like, you know, backyard fire drill. Coates did a great job of noticing that his quarterback's in trouble, and then breaking off his route, and then working his way towards the left sideline, away, up and away from the defender. And Ben floated that one in there nicely. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think one of the incompletions was a deep one to Antonio Brown, kind of after a busted play that Brown dropped
over the middle.
Yeah,
that one.
Yeah, that dropped. Yep. I'll have to go back and look if that was over the 15 yard mark. I believe it was. But you know that
the one he dropped was on a 3rd and 10. So I don't know if they do it from the line of scrimmage or from where Ben actually released the ball.
No, it's from the line of scrimmage.
Okay, so that was the one he dropped, was a 3rd and 10. On the third down prior to that, it was a 3rd and 16 where Ben tried to get to AB over the middle and just kind of overthrew everything. AB kind of looked around and wondered if maybe he had been grabbed around the waist, but he went to him on consecutive third downs around the same area of the field, and yeah, didn't complete either one.
Boy, you talk about Coates and Coates versus the Wheaton talk that we had. And I couldn't help but think after those explosive plays yesterday, going back and the things that I wrote about Sammy coming out of Auburn, and how all those explosive plays that he had, in particular the touchdowns that he had in college. I think, I can't remember the exact number, but like all but one or two were like 30 yards or more, you know, in distance from the line of scrimmage. So, you know, I think you saw there are some shots of Coates in this game, not only as a receiver, but as a as kind of a guy going down on punts, where his speed is evident. And you know, what a great deep threat he is. Now, would you like to see more out of Coates? You know, I guess what I'm trying to get at is he a one trick pony right now? You know, a la Mike Wallace, you know, does he need to develop more as an intermediate pass catcher?
Yes, I think that's fair. I mean, look, you know, we saw it, and you know, we'll get into this here. We saw Ben go to Coates repeatedly, and again, if you're gonna enjoy the fact that the Steelers were willing to take shots against the Skins, it's hard to be too upset with some of the shots they took with Sammy Coates. But, you know, Ben missed – but I don't know, missed isn't the right word. Ben opted to not go to guys open in the middle of the field to take those shots with Coates. And you had the two at the end of the first half, the second one resulting in an interception. And then you had the one before the completion where he went to Sammy down that right sideline in the third quarter. And Antonio Brown expressed his displeasure. And we saw this last year a couple times with Antonio Brown. when Landry Jones was the quarterback. I didn't ever think I would see it with Ben Roethlisberger as the quarterback. Brown was, you know, quick to apologize last year when Jones' situation. I didn't hear anybody ask him. I don't know if he actually stuck around in the locker room immediately after the game. I heard a bunch of the different interviews that were done. We played some of them on the postgame show. But he was demonstrative, and he was yelling, presumably at Ben, to the point where, and I'm sure they didn't, I would imagine they didn't show this on television or couldn't get to it. It was the other side of the field. But Ramon Foster had to come over and kind of settle him down. And because he thought he was wide open over the middle of the field, and, you know, Coates obviously didn't, they didn't complete the pass. So interesting dynamic there, and interesting, you know, an interesting day for the passing game. Look, this is the lowest yardage AB has had since 2012, since Ben, when Ben was the quarterback. Ben's passer rating under 80, you know, two more interceptions against the Bengals. They just didn't have it together. And Dave, just a kind of a, I don't know if the right word's amusing, but Ben's passer rating throwing to AB in week one was 150.0, and to all the other receivers, it was something like 89.7. And then in week two, Ben's passer rating throwing to AB was 9.3, and to the other guys, it was 107.9. So he and AB just weren't together in the one yesterday.
Yeah, and you know, the Bengals made it a point to try to, you know, bracket AB quite a bit and try to take him out of the game. And you know, even though Ben threw at him what 11 times, only, you know, four receptions in this game for 39 yards. So yeah, I mean, look, as long as it doesn't become a locker room problem, you know, I mean, you know, you expect AB to be competitive and want the football. so, you know, like I said, as long as it doesn't become an issue, I'm sure after the game was over, Ben probably had a word or two on the side with AB, and we'll just have to see how it works. I mean, AB is going to get his. I mean, it's a down game for AB for sure. But look, anytime you can come out of a game with your star receiver only catching four balls for 39 yards, and you still win, and your quarterback has an off day and still throws three touchdowns, you know, you got to be pretty thankful, I think.
I think that's exactly the right way to look at it. That's what I, you know, was said on the postgame show is, you know, silver lining is not really the right term, but, you know, you had a game where the offense scored three touchdowns. And I think this is incredibly important. You know, they're getting down in the red zone and they're scoring touchdowns. They were 2 for 2 in the red zone, and the other touchdown came from the 20. So obviously the red zone's defined as being inside the 20. So scoring touchdowns, which is what you're looking for. The Bengals were 0 for 3 in their opportunities. You can just say that that was the difference in the game right there. Your quarterback didn't have a great game. Your best receiver was bottled up, and yet you found a way to get a win and put 24 points on the board. So, you know, in terms of the good stuff offensively, Dave, D'Angelo Williams continues to just astound, you know, goes for a career-high carries in this one of 32, just under 100 yards rushing, moves it up to 50th in the all-time career rushing list. He passed Garrison Hurst and James Brooks with the game yesterday. And you know, he catches a couple balls. He had a great move along the sideline, a great juke to go for 20 yards on the drive where he caught the touchdown pass, so he got the reward. So, you know, and then, of course, we can get into the tight ends, as both those guys made really good touchdown catches.
Was that not the best 2.9 yards per carry game you've ever seen by a running back?
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, you know, he had a couple tackles for loss, you know, that obviously kept him under 100. But, you know, he got the big yards when he needed to. He turned the corner repeatedly when it didn't look like it was there. You know, yards after contact was probably, you know, really good. And the Steelers relied on him, and they kept giving it to him. So, yeah, it was a really nice game. He obviously leads the NFL in rushing yards. He's second in yards from scrimmage, a yard behind the kid from Kansas City. So, you know, 303 yards in two games. A great start for him to the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, continuing on talking about the offense, the offensive line didn't have a great game, but, you know, you're going up against a pretty good defensive front in the Bengals as well. There wasn't a lot of running room in the middle on those middle running plays for the most part. Pass protection at times was sketchy. Alejandro Villanueva, you know, continues to have some issues out there on the outside. He's so big, you know, and and he's got to do a better job of not letting not letting his chest area be exposed. You can see him get kind of knocked off balance a few times in pass protection. And on top of it, is it because Alejandro Villanueva is such a nice guy and a guy that you root for that he's not getting some of these holding calls against him? I mean, the first two games, look, I'd take my glasses off, my black and gold glasses off, and put them on the desk here. He's had a couple of guys by the neck a few times that I thought, man, how did that not get called? And I thought there was one run to the left side as well, too, where I can't wait to see the all-22 view on it. Looks like he has pretty good grab of some jersey on that play as well, too. So, look, I mean, Ben technically only sacked, what, one time in the game on Sunday. He did take a few hits. Obviously, he had to perform some of his Ben Roethlisberger magic to get out of a few other plays. So, you know, that might end up being the worst, or we hope the worst performance we see from the offensive line this year, until maybe they meet the Bengals later on in the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, I said it was not nearly as good as last week. I would grade it as a solid performance. I'm with you. There were some holding calls that could have gone against the Steelers. We saw pressure up the middle at times, which is obviously the most difficult thing for a quarterback. I didn't think, you know, certainly DeCastro and Pouncey didn't dominate Pecco and Atkins. Those guys are really good players. But the Steelers were able to run the ball much more effectively than the Bengals, and you can argue that that was also a key to the game. So, yeah, look, the offense, you know, you give D'Angelo Williams a gold star. You nod to the offensive line, I guess, but it just wasn't a great game. Eli Rogers was not involved. He wasn't targeted much. He got a catch early, but, you know, not many chances for him. DHB, not a factor in this, but, you know, the tight ends, Dave, were a factor, and it goes back to what, you know, you said the Bengals are trying to do. They're trying to have somebody other than AB beat them, much like the Steelers did with A.J. Green. Look, neither quarterback had a good game, and neither receiver was much of a factor in the, neither star receiver. But the tight ends made two great touchdown catches, and we saw a lot of 13 personnel. And, you know, David Johnson isn't going to catch a ton of passes, but he had some, you know, really solid blocking in this game. So the Steelers have given the Bengals have given the Steelers the tight end option, with Heath getting 10 catches in each of the regular season games last year. They gave it to him again yesterday, 5 for 52 and two touchdowns. For the two pass catchers.
Yeah, and when you total up the targets and receptions that those two had, they were targeted, talking about Grimble and James, a total of 9 times. They had the 5 catches, 2 of those touchdowns. How nice is it Ben finally has him a tall receiver, right? 6'7".
Two great catches by James. The first one on the sideline, I think, on the Steelers' second drive, a little bit of a questionable decision by Ben, and James goes up and high points it. And I just wrote about this. And then the touchdown, the same thing. I mean, it was in traffic, and Jesse James went up there and it was, you know, nobody else was going to catch it up there, and he did. They were impressive catches.
Do you think I was watching that touchdown to James again this morning, and once again, I can't wait to see the all 22 on that one as well. Do you think someone ran the wrong route there, or was it just the kind of the delay of Roethlisberger getting rid of the football? Because there are 3 Steelers players right in line in the back. You got James, and then AB's back there, and I forget who the other one back behind him is there. But you have, you know, in other words, your receivers drew all the coverage to one area of the field, and thank God Jesse James, 6'7", what at 6'6", and a few phone books, that he's able to go up and you know, catch that pass in the end zone there. But look, Jesse James, this could be a tight end for the Steelers this season that maybe only catches what, 45 balls with 10 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, I put the over-under at 5 at the beginning of the season. I'd be surprised if he got 10, but, you know, I think 5, 6, 7 is absolutely a doable number.
And that catch along the sidelines, as you pointed out, that was a great catch as well, too. So, you know, he spread the – you know, Roethlisberger spread the football around. That was good. You know, obviously there were a couple throws he'd like to have back in that game. on top of it. And look, I mean, if you can get out of a game with your MVP quarterback, you know, 19 of 37, 259 yards with two touchdowns, two interceptions, and then the three touchdowns, and still win the game, hey, you take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and it wasn't the best day for the offense. Let's flip over to the defense, because it was a very good day for the Steelers defense. And I know probably our listeners are going to focus a lot on what happened over the last 5 minutes of the game when the Steelers, you know, gave up the only touchdown they gave up. But, you know, Dave, let's start with kind of the run defense. And now in two games, they've given up 101 yards against teams that, you know, like to run the ball and, you know, think they can run the ball. The run defense, very stout, just 48 yards for the Bengals on, I think, 18 carries. And 10 of those came right at the end of the game when Geo on a 3rd-and-1 got 10 yards when the Steelers were in their, call it whatever you want, prevent defense, whatever you would like to call it. But Bengals did not, you know, and that was the long game the Bengals had. So not able to run the ball, again, made the team one-dimensional and made Dalton be the guy to beat him without, you know, really having A.J. Green to go to.
Yeah, I mean, we almost really kind of saw a repeat of what we saw against the Redskins, except we saw more dime or quarters, whatever you want to call it, defensively. In fact, something to the tune of 30, over 30 snaps that we saw, you know, them utilize that kind of sub package with the six defensive backs on the field there. So they still managed to bottle up the run, as you stated there. And look, I mean, Dalton and Kirk Cousins were not sharp in these two games, but that's not the fault of your defense there. I found several things surprising in this game. A, Cockrell pretty much being asked to plaster AJ or follow AJ Green around the field in this game. And I was surprised to see so much of that dime personnel used, you know, in this game against the Bengals as well too. And, you know, look, Artie Burns has his problems. You know, they're easy to point out, but on the flip side, you're getting him a lot of valuable playing time early in the season, and that has to count for something, especially when you're still winning here. So I did find those two things surprising. They played back, you know, again, you know, oftentimes rushing three or four guys, and that sure was aggravating, you know, as a spectator side of it, especially you consider they only had one sack in the game. Their one sack was by Arthur Motes, who on that play dropped into coverage, you know, so it's more of, I guess, a coverage sack than anything. You just would like to see that front get more pressure, and I think we're going to be hoping and praying for it and speculating that we're going to get it. But right now, you know, until maybe Dupree comes back off of IR, I'm not convinced we're going to get it. You know, I think they're pretty much set in dropping all these guys into coverage, kind of confusing quarterbacks maybe with these traps on the outside occasionally sending, you know, a blitz with these guys and letting quarterbacks have what they want underneath with the hope that they get them in a lot of third down situations and that the quarterback doesn't throw for the chains on third down, which is something we've seen both Kirk Cousins and Andy Dalton do so far in these first two games. Boy, they've gotten off. You want to stat the circle stats, circle the third down stats for both the Steelers offense and the Steelers defense through these first two games. Because if you want to, yep, if you want to judge this defense by passing yards, like so many people try to do, you're not going to be happy with what you find, because they've given up a lot of passing yards in these first two games, but their third downs are much better than they were at the start of last season. If you're getting off on third down, that's very important.
I totally agree with that. Red zone defense, third down defenses, and stuff on the run, they've been great. They have given up a lot of passing yards. A lot of that has come late. The Redskins got a lot of it late when the game, the outcome was done. The Bengals certainly got some of it late in this game, and you know, it's a little bit of a concern. I know that you wrote about this, Dave. I think 7 explosive plays. The Bengals had 6 different receivers have a catch of 20 or more yards, so that's a little bit concerning. But I don't think anybody had a catch of 30 yards. No double explosive plays of 40 yards. So you've got that.
They didn't let one over their head, right? And, you know, of the seven explosive, here's one thing that I think they're going to struggle with against teams that have good pass catching running backs is these running backs, you know, gashing them for explosive plays, because of the seven explosive plays that they gave up Sunday against the Bengals, three of them came from running backs. You had the one to Jeremy Hill. Thank goodness Jay Wobble, Javon Hargrave had some hustle to him on that play, even though the end result was a horse collar or whatnot. But you know, he was the one that had to track down Jeremy Hill on that one long, what was it, 25-yard catch that he had in the game. And Giovanni Bernard had nine catches in this game for 100 yards with a long of 25, and he had I believe two of the other explosive plays. So you know, got to watch those running backs if at all possible, especially kind of when you're playing the you know, this quarters type defense against offenses that are attacking that with four verticals in the passing game.
Yeah, you know, that is a question mark when they're dropping the way they are and keeping everything in front of them. They've got to, you know, make sure they tackle well when they have those situations on the tight ends and the running backs on that shorter stuff, and certainly on the touchdown, that's on Artie Burns and Sean Davis. They, you know, Burns didn't break down and make the tackle the way he should have. He got juked, and then Sean Davis took a terrible angle on it and got beat down the sideline. So, you know, you live and you learn from that stuff. That's the only touchdown the Bengals got. Dave, it'll be interesting as we, you know, get into the week here about, you know, the Steelers have played. They've been very conservative in the blitzes. I mean, I can't remember them bringing the house once. I mean, bring five a couple times, but rushing four and sometimes three, as you pointed out, they're going to play Carson Wentz. And people can get a good scouting report on the Eagles tonight. They're the Monday night football game against the Bears. This will be his second start. Obviously, next week will be his third start. And I think they'll throw everything. They'll make it as difficult as they can, obviously, for Wentz, but they will throw him every look possible and probably bring guys from different areas and make him go through his progressions. It'll be interesting to see with a young quarterback versus, you know, Cousins isn't the most experienced guy, but he's been in the league a long time. And obviously, Andy Dalton is a very experienced guy. So you have a different flavor coming up this week, and we'll see if Keith Butler approaches it differently.
On the flip side, you can make the argument, if it's not broke, why are you trying to fix it? Talking about look, you can take the same approach maybe with Wentz as far as how, you know, let's just see how patient this kid can be to take the underneath stuff that we're giving him instead of him trying to force a football down the field. So we're only going to rush three or four. We're going to kind of mix up our coverages in the secondary with you know, with some of these traps and whatnot and pattern reading type coverages to just see how patient he can be, because, you know, like it or not, Kirk Cousins was very patient in that opener. He completed a lot of his short passes. The problem is when he did get in situations where he either had to or he chose to throw the football down the field, you know, that's when, you know, we saw where his weakness was. Now, with a guy like Dalton, you know, nothing he saw yesterday probably surprised him whatsoever. It was just the fact that he wasn't able to make the throws when he needed to, and especially when you get into third down situations. Boy, you love nothing better than an opposing quarterback throwing short of the sticks on third down, right? And
we haven't talked about specifically the guys in the secondary, but yes, that, you know, then you go up and they laid a lot of big hits in this game across the board. Gay, Golden, Mitchell, yes, they were able to make those plays. And I do want to highlight Mike Mitchell for a second, Dave, because, you know, we've seen Mike Mitchell make some maybe not the smartest plays at times, and two hits, two situations in this game I thought were worth mentioning. One, there was a pass, I can't remember if it was intended for Green or somebody else, but somebody got a hand on it, and Mitchell made contact with the receiver in the back but didn't unload on him. And it was a tad late, but there was no foul because, you know, he didn't, you know, everybody understood the game situation. And then later, he absolutely crushed Ozuma catching a ball, and it's exactly the textbook hit, kind of helmet kind of on the ball, shoulder in there, knocks it loose. It would have been a reception. He knocks it loose. That's what you're looking to see. And, you know, we haven't always seen it, so it's worth pointing it out when we do.
And yeah, absolutely. And boy, Golden has played well in the first two games as well, too. When was the last time you remember the Steelers' two safeties having a as good of a first two games as Golden and Mitchell have had. And I guess throw Sean Davis in that as well too, because he's had to play some deep safety as well too in these first two games as well. I mean, you have to go back to several years ago with Paulo Malo and Ryan Clark, right? Because I mean, the safeties really have played well, I thought, in these first two games. And you know, Mitchell is just a heat. Boy, there's that one hit over there on the sideline. Him and James Harrison, just, I mean, you could hear that, you know, through your TV screen with Mitchell on that clock over there on that side. So, yeah, you know, textbook hitting.
Yeah, really, really solid stuff from the secondary. So, defensively, look, as you said, they need to get more stuff out of the outside linebackers. The, you know, Timmons had a fine game. We talked about Shazier. You know, Hargrave less noticeable. Tuitt less noticeable in this one. Cam knocked down a couple passes. We saw a little bit of Ricardo Matthews, a little bit of Dan McCullers. But again, you keep guys to 16 points. That's the most important stat. And one of the TDs came late. So, you know, overall, I think a really good effort.
And so I don't get accused of not acknowledging when Dan McCullers does something good. He had one fine play in there. That he didn't play a lot of snaps in this game on Sunday, but you know, one run I think in particular, he shed his blocker up front and was right there to corral the ball carrier. So you know, keeping his snaps kind of limited keeps him fresh, keeps him hungry as well too. And this rotation has worked good so far. Now obviously Tuitt played a lot of snaps in this game, and probably Hayward would have had too had he not had to come off momentarily. In fact, Hayward played 64 snaps, 84% total, and Tuitt played 70 snaps, 92% total. You had Matthews play 14 snaps, 18% total. McCullers played 5, which was 7%. And who am I missing? Hargrave played 11, 14% of the entire defensive snaps. So actually saw Shamarco Thomas play 4 snaps defensively in this game as well. Artie Burns, 32 snaps in this game for him. You know, to go along with Sean Davis played 64 as well.
Yeah, and Dave, you know, you've heard me talk about ever since they practiced this dime defense, waiting to see it out there. So I was thrilled they got that out there. And, this is what they're going to be in passing situations. Now, I have no idea early in the third quarter when the Bengals took back-to-back penalties and faced a first and 25 why the Steelers didn't go dime there. And, you know, it was a good throw, really good throw by Andy Dalton to Tyler Boyd up the seam for 29 yards, but it was right over Timmons. I mean, it's just – it's ridiculous to not be in dime situation on first and 25. And they, again, didn't do it right out of the chute in the game. Just like last week, it took them a while to get there. But I think you will see this be the most common defense the Steelers end up playing here going forward. It will be that group of personnel, assuming everybody stays healthy, that group of 6. I mean, you know, that versus the base will be interesting. But I expect to see Davis and Burns on the field a significant amount going forward with the Steelers, you know, almost always in 5 defensive backs and maybe a time with the dime in 6. So I was thrilled to see them go that way.
And as I said at the top of the show, I was a bit surprised that they played that much of it, and I'm glad they did, obviously. And look, for all the warts that we could say Artie Burns has, great pass break up there in the end zone on the one play, and
I thought he was okay.
Look, and as I stated, at least you're getting him on the field in these real-time situations here, and you're withstanding the mistakes that he does make, the plays against the runs, those kind of gaffes, the missed tackles. He's got to get more physical. I think we all know that. I mean, he's not William Gay on the outside there as well. But you know, getting him out there, getting these snaps underneath his belt is going to be huge. And boy, what can you say about William Gay? I mean, that guy just constantly shows up, every Sunday. And Cockrell really surprised me. Boy, what a bogus PI call that was. Is this 2 weeks in a row now that we can kind of I can stomach the PI call late in the game against the Redskins a lot more than I can the one against AJ Green there against the Bengals on Sunday.
This was worse. This was by far worse. I mean, I can live with the Artie Burns pass interference call. The call on Cockrell was just a bad call, period.
Yeah, so, and Dan Fouts, well, he stuck his arm out. Okay, he stuck his arm out, but he didn't really impede. If anything, you could probably get Green for pushing him, pushing off of him.
Sure, I thought it was more on Green, for sure.
You know, so, but hey, you know, they won the football game. They recovered after that penalty. So there you go. Everybody's going to talk about that Tyler Boyd fumble there at the end of the football game. Your thoughts?
Thought he was down. Now, I saw Dean Blandino's explanation, and I guess by the letter of the law, either way, whatever the ruling on the field was, based on what he said, was going to be the call. So you couldn't see it come out. You couldn't see that he was clearly down. They ruled it a fumble. I think it was unfortunate for Tyler Boyd. He had a pretty good game coming back to where he played his college football. I think some Steeler fans were probably rightly nervous about what was going to happen. But, every guy in the press box thought he was down. I thought he was down. But maybe the Steelers got the benefit of not having a camera. A 360 degree camera.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked when the play stood as called. But after Dean Blandino posted that video on Twitter late last night, I understand why it wasn't overturned. You could go through this thing with a fine tooth comb on some of these still shots. It'd be interesting to see if and I doubt it will, but we'll see if the All 22 shows us anything else. You know, as far as knee down before. The thing is that James Harrison, has obstructs the view of the football fairly well from that goal line angle that they have of the play. So, look, I mean, the Bengals still would have had to go down and score and get a two-point conversion, right? So nothing was a given at that point, although you had to be getting a little bit nervous, right?
Yeah, I mean, they had just gone right down the field. So, the unfortunate thing for the Steelers, offensively, they had, with 4 minutes to go, they got the ball twice and they couldn't get a first down. So they were giving the ball back. They had a very good drive to make it 24-9. That was a key. That drive lasted about six or almost 7 minutes that ended with the Williams touchdown. But I don't think they got a first down after that, whereas one first down would have kind of let everybody breathe a little more deeply.
Yeah, and you keep going back to circling the third down stats in this game, and boy, they this defense really has played well, and we'll see if they send that pressure more if Keith Butler tries to confuse Carson Wentz in the game next week. But on the flip side, it wouldn't surprise me if they lay back, like I said, just make see how poised and complacent Wentz can be at kind of taking the underneath stuff. You just really would wish that you would that you could get more pressure from a four-man pass rush moving forward here. And that's really all I can say outside of not liking those explosive plays that in particularly went to the running backs in this game. But 2-0 is still 2-0. That's the main stat that really counts here.
Yeah, it looked like they might be 2-0 in a game where they lost the turnover battle 2-0, but they got two turnovers in the last 2 minutes, and a little bit like last week, getting a turnover in the last minute of the game. So their turnover numbers are a little bit deceiving as well, although obviously the one with Tyler Boyd was significant. The one on the last play of the game wasn't, just like Harrison's interception last week wasn't. But, stats tend to normalize as the year goes on, but yeah, you can read a lot into the pass defense numbers in terms of yardage, but really third and fourth down, they've been excellent. Red zone, they've been excellent. They've been able to stop the run. So we've seen an uneven performance from the offense and a really good performance from the offense. I think we've seen two pretty good performances from the defense, and that's got to make people, I think, relatively happy here after two
and
weeks.
Boy, Jarvis Jones had an easy interception drop, and Cockrell just missed one. Am I missing another one? in there as well, too.
Cockrell in week one and Jarvis yesterday.
Yeah, but Cockrell almost had another one out there on the edge yesterday.
Oh, yeah. No, he jumped the route. Yep. No, that he did. And that was, you know, Alex has written about that, and he put something up about it, I think, last week coming into the game about how, you know, the guy will drop off the sideline and take the flat. And that's what they did there. And he saw it, and, you know, just unlucky.
Yeah. And if that one doesn't clank off the hands of Jarvis, you know, there's another one for you as well too. They're going to start here. Here's the thing, is there's been a lot of they're close, right? And remember the one, of course, in as you pointed out against the Redskins that went right in and out, surprise Cockrell, really in and out of his hands in the game against Washington. The good news is that we're talking about a lot of these almost interceptions, and I think at some point we're going to start. You know, those things are going to start being corralled in there, and obviously you like the two turnovers that they did get late in the game against the Bengals yesterday as well too. So you keep those third downs in line, and you keep your opposition out of the end zone. You know, I hate to be Captain Obvious here, but that's how you win football games.
That is how you win football games, and it's a good start. And so we get a chance tonight to watch the Eagles play and to see Carson Wentz and what they have going, and that should be a good scouting report for us, Dave. And we'll get an Eagles beat writer with this Wednesday and get into the breakdown and, you know, take a look around what happened around the league yesterday. Some interesting stories, and boy, we saw two teams with a pass rush last night, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had sack envy. I had to look up and check what a sack was. It was really getting after the quarterback. What a gutsy performance by Sam Bradford. You really have to, as Hines Ward say, take your hat off and hand it to him. There. One other note from the game yesterday, David. Justin Gilbert, 7 special team snaps. So he's...
Yeah, you know, I didn't see him. I'm annoyed at myself because I'm generally paying attention to that. I didn't see him on the field, but I saw immediately after the game from the game book that he did play in that. So B.J. Finney, none. So I don't know if they, you know, switched. Obviously not exactly – not the same type of player. But so he got in there. Good to
see.
Yeah,
and also we'll have to – I don't remember this, and it'll obviously show up when we do our charting here in the next day and a half here. You remember Ryan Harris playing 3 offensive snaps in this game?
I'm trying to remember. Did they have? Were there any kneel downs? Or I don't remember. See, I don't remember seeing him come on.
Yeah,
or off.
I don't remember that either. I'm not. You know, we have to trust the game book until we go back through the film. Maybe it was at the end there as well. What do you? You know, back to our talk about Wheaton and Sammy and DHB and the dogs and the bone. What do you do now? You still dressing 5 when Wheaton's healthy?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd be interested in who you don't dress, though. I think it's probably that's more the better question is who you don't dress instead of dressing all 5 wide receivers. But look.
Yeah, I'll go back to, you know, if and when Cody Wallace can play,
that's probably your spot right there. That's true. That's very, very,
but then
true.
If Nix plays, then I think it's Matakevich or Dangerfield. I think you're right.
Here's the thing. We're talking about a 2-0 Steelers team without Le'Veon Bell, without Martavis Bryant, without Ladarius Green, without Roosevelt Nix, without Bud Dupree, Marcus Wheaton, without Cody Wallace. Not that, you know, obviously we hope we don't see Cody Wallace. I mean, what's that say right now? Without Cinquez Golson, really, even though you really can't count him because he hasn't played a single defensive snap during his 2-year career. But I mean, what does that say right now, or what does that say about what we have to look forward to?
Well, hopefully really good things. I mean, look, this is a good Bengals team, and they're going to scare the heck out of me in week 15 if the game matters, if Tyler Eifert's back and they're healthy. Because Eifert with A.J. Green, I don't know if the Steelers are going to be able to, you know, handle all of that with a developing Tyler Boyd. But You know, again, same thing on the other side of the ball for the Steelers. They'll be developing as well. But look, this is, they're both really good football teams, and neither quarterback played well, neither star receiver played well. But it was it wasn't the most entertaining of games. But I'll put the Bengals a clear number three in the AFC, and maybe even in the same category now with the Steelers and the Patriots. I don't think the Steelers and Patriots are head and shoulders better than the Bengals. I'd say these are the three best teams in the AFC. And they host the Broncos this week, so that'll be a really interesting game.
And let's kind of close up with Ladarius here. Did you read the quotes that I have from Pete Mezzelarge from his interview Saturday on Sirius XM?
I did not.
Pete was the Chargers tight ends coach in 2014 and last season. He talked about how Green suffered that ankle injury originally last year during the game against Baltimore, and how he thought the team was able to solve his headache issues he was having at the time as well, too. Here's his quote. He says, "Ladarius actually got hurt in the Baltimore game and then struggled for the next week. I think 4 or 5 weeks trying to play with a bad ankle, which limited him a bunch, and they finally ended up putting him on IR, and then he had surgery on it, and he's still trying to recover from the ankle." Metzlars goes on to say that he had some headache issues and some concussion issues, but I thought at the time they finally did a scan of his sinuses and they were just all congested and stuff, and I had thought that they had cleared those things out and that it was kind of the cause of all the headaches and stuff. He goes on to say, "And I've heard some different reports on whether he's had headaches or not." I don't know if he said or whatever it is, and he's still trying to get back from that ankle injury. But I think Ladarius is a tough guy. I think he can play through a lot of stuff, and I kept pushing him all the time, and he was willing to do it and didn't say a word and just goes out and plays. So that's his former position coach who now is no longer in the NFL right now. Has some positive things. He goes on to say, "Ladarius is a playmaker. He's a difference maker because he's 6'6", 250, and runs a 4'4", 4'5", 40, and it's just amazing. He gets the ball in his hands on a little shallow cross, and some DB or linebacker is drawing a line on him and thinking they're going to tackle him. All of a sudden, he's pulling away from those guys, and they don't touch him, and they can't catch him. With the weapons that Pittsburgh has in their offense right now, outside and stuff, and the running backs and everything that they're doing, when he gets on the field, it's going to be a huge bonus for their offense and an explosive player for them." So some really kind of uplifting comments, if you will, about Ladarius Green, and obviously we're not going to see him for the first 6 weeks of the season. You know, we'll just sit and wait, and hopefully he can get on the field and start being this player that you know, Pete Mezzelarge painted him as.
Interesting comments, and you know, I think generally positive. So that's a good find.
I thought it was interesting too. I really enjoyed that interview, and you can read the quotes and of course listen to the sound clip from Sirius on SteelersDepot.com as well too. All right, David, I think we tied that one all up in a knot here, and now we'll sit and listen to the narratives about how the Steelers got all the football calls in the game yesterday for the rest of the week, and then watch the Eagles play the Bears on Monday night and start previewing that game starting on Wednesday. And you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, please go to SteelersDepot.com. Find the donate button in the top upper right navigational bar. David, have a great Monday and Tuesday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.